Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here. Marquise Munson. Is spinning the hits still something people say?
That's what I would bring back. Coogee outfits.
Yes, Coogee, yes.
All right, we've moved on. We're going to talk sports now because I don't know what you guys are talking about. All right, now, but let me remind you guys real quickly here before we get to Kentucky basketball. We got the Preds back on the ice tonight and college football playoff rankings coming out tonight. Nashville Soccer Club is turning its Major League Soccer expansion draft war room into a bash on Broadway. And you're invited. That's right. The Nashville SC Draft War Room is now a big party, and you're invited. The MLS Expansion Draft will be at Ole Red on Broadway today. It's a free event. It begins at 4 o'clock, but fans are encouraged to arrive earlier to get a good spot on the floor and listen to some good live music. The Expansion Draft will kick off right at 4:30. Attendees must RSVP to attend the event. Go to NashvilleSC.com. Again, the Expansion Draft coming up tonight. For the MLS, that's 4:30 at Ole Red, RSVP at NashvilleSC.com. Make sure you're checking that out. Preds back on the ice tonight in a critical game against Winnipeg in the division. Not playing good hockey on the defensive end of the ice. We'll talk to Chris Mason coming up in a few minutes. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7 right here on 102.5 The Game. And I want we'll get to the playoff rankings in just a second, Derek. But, you know, we were talking yesterday, playing in the show and looking at things, and Kentucky's playing basketball. And I'm like, look at this Utah Valley team giving Kentucky a run. And I think last
coached
night.
Coached by Mark Mattson.
There you go.
Is it Mattson?
Is it the guy who couldn't dance for the Lakers?
Yeah. Yeah. He was the All-American
at Stanford. That's the only thing I remember about him.
All-American at Stanford. He was the Lakers' first-round pick. And now he's Utah Valley's head basketball coach.
So here's the thing. They struggled yesterday. And I think there was, like, they had to start a Big Blue Nation chant at Rupp Arena to drown out the Utah Valley fans that were cheering because they were so loud. Because I think, of course, Kentucky fans are like, oh, why do I need to go to that game? You know, we're going to roll. We're going to win big. And it was a close game late. I think it was like a 5-point game with like 8 to play. And obviously they lost earlier this year already to a team, to Evansville, that they should never lose to. And they're loaded with young talent. They fall in the polls. But here's my question. I saw a tweet from Pat Forty, who is, of course, a Louisville guy. I got to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. But he sent out a tweet after the loss to Evansville. And he basically said, Coach Cal, and I'm paraphrasing here, Coach Cal essentially undercoaches in the first half of the season before the new year to allow his guys to figure it all out. Mm-hmm. My first response is, he sort of undercoaches all the time. My second response is, that actually isn't a terrible strategy. From what you saw last night, are you seeing a coach who's sort of letting his players work it out and figure it out? Is that really abnormal for Coach Cal? Because sometimes I feel like I'm seeing him do that in conference play and in the SEC tournament. His players are just better at that point of the year. What do you make of that comment from Pat Forty about Coach Cal in Kentucky?
It's hard to say whether that's the case or not. Because if you say that's indeed the case, you can't beat Michigan State if you just let kids figure it out. You can't beat a team like that just because you roll out the basketball and say, hey, guys, you figure it out, and I'm not going to do much coaching. But then you lose to Evansville, and you say, well, man, which one is it? I think it may be a little bit of both. I think at times he let the guys try to figure it out, you know, on the court themselves, you know, rather than taking a timeout. If a team's going on a run, he kind of let the guys play through it. I know last night when Utah Valley kind of went on their run, he didn't call a timeout. He kind of let the kids play through it. And ultimately, Kentucky ended up winning a game because I just think they were bigger than Utah Valley, and they were able to get the rebounds and kind of work in the middle of the paint. But what's astonishing to me is with all of these really good players, Kentucky gets year in and out, year out. They are a poor 3-point shooting team. They are horrid in 3-point shooting. They made 1 out of 12 last night. I think they're dead last in the SEC in 3-point percentages. They don't take as many. I think they're last as far as attempts a game, I think at 15. But you would think that Kentucky can always find a score, like a guy that can shoot from outside.
I mean, they got dudes.
Yeah, they got
dudes. And they're
dudes
always going to end
play.
Up. They're always going to end up being far better in February and March.
Exactly. Like
than they are in November.
Had 26 points yesterday, right. But he's not a great shooter. Period.
Right. And so, I think it's an interesting theory floated by 40. I don't really see Coach Cal doing a lot of coaching throughout the course of the entire year. I think what makes Coach Cal great is sort of Dabo Swinney style stuff, mm-hmm. which is great representative of the university, CEO, salesman. You know, he knows what to say when. He talks about how much money he's generated for his players, and it works, and he recruits. And frankly, you don't have to recruit all that hard at Kentucky. They come to you when you're the Kentucky coach. And part of his job is sort of psychologist, mm-hmm. therapist. It's sort of his job is to get these young kids to all buy into something and learn, because they've all come from all these different AAU teams, and then they come onto this roster and they're all super talented and they all want to get to the league. And to get them to do what they do every year, I think is a hard way to coach, frankly. But this is the path he chooses. He says all the time, hey, I don't like the one-and-done rule, but if the one-and-done rule is in place, I'm gonna utilize it. So he's been open about how he doesn't want the one-and-done to be a thing. But if you're going to have the one-and-done and you're going to live and die by that, it means you're going to have to deal with a lot of growing pains early in the season, and he has to do that almost every single year. You look at Tennessee, already in the rankings now, at 20th, because they got a big win over the weekend over Washington, and you know they're already looking better than anticipated. Jordan Bowden, I think, had... was SEC Player of the Week. Mm-hmm. They already look closer to the top of the SEC than we thought. I mean, it's so early. We're talking 3-4 games into the season here. But it's already looking like Tennessee and Kentucky are a little bit closer than we anticipated. I have no idea if that's going to hold up.
Yeah.
Because Kentucky always gets better.
Well, you know, Coach Cal, he's, for whatever reason, his teams have gotten better as the season has gone. And maybe it is... You know, like Pat said, it is him, you know, allowing the guys to figure it out at the beginning, and then they trust one another. And at toward the middle to the end of the season, you start to see, you know, Kentucky become the team that we thought they were going to be at the end of the season.
That strikes me as a, you know, coaches, Derek. Yeah. Like, these guys are ego.
Exactly. So
driven,
it's hard for
like,
me to see
control
them do
freaks.
That.
Like, it's hard for me to see a coach saying, Like when he sees a mistake by a player, mm-hmm. not saying something about it.
Exactly.
Because that would be under coaching, right?
Yeah.
Like not commenting to a player who does something wrong. Mm-hmm. I can't even believe a coach is wired that way.
Yeah, and again, I can't see them beating Michigan State employing that type of coaching.
Right.
You know? It has to be something more. Or maybe he's
all right, guys,
just,
you got this.
Yeah,
go play Michigan State.
Go ahead. Play Michigan State. You're fine. No. Maybe it's not necessarily. Maybe it's the way Coach Cal, as far as him interjecting himself into it, but not the way the other coaches. Maybe the other coaches do the bulk of the coaching and, you know, coaching guys up and scheming. Coach Cal kind of sits back, and then once he thinks that everybody's figured, he kind of interjects himself in after that. Maybe that's the case, but I can't see the whole coaching staff saying, nah, here, guys.
I mean,
here's the basketball.
Go play. And what does it say about your coaching ability if you're like, oh, they need less of me right now to do a better job?
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think that's fair to say either. I'm not sure I agree with Pat Forty's idea on mm-hmm. this. I thought it was an interesting concept, yeah. and I wanted to bring it up to you because, again, you were watching the game last night, and they're struggling again. With a completely inferior opponent that they have no business struggling with.
But the one thing about college basketball is that if you can shoot the three-pointer, you keep yourself in the game. And Utah Valley kept themselves in the game because of them shooting the three-point shot well. And Kentucky not being able to shoot. They made 1 of 12 three-pointers last night. That's like, man, that's hard to not. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
To make 1 out of 12, maybe they were not
good. I could do that.
They were not good shots. I don't know. But to make 1 out of 12 with the guys that they have, you know, you're talking 4 or 5 star guys, you would think they would make at least 4 of them. But they are the worst 3-point shooting team in the conference.
It's early, only a couple games. It's early. So we'll
you know,
we'll
it might all even itself out, and it might end up being, you know, right in the middle.
All right, college athletics. We got Chris Mason coming up in just a few minutes. But when we come back, Top 4 Tuesday, do we expect any craziness tonight with the college football playoff rankings coming out? We'll get to that right here on Morning Drive. Derek, what you got over there, buddy?
Yes, they're playing that music, and you know what that music means.
I do not, actually.
Wrestling.
Oh.
A little bit of wrestling.
That's what that music means?
WWE Monday Night Raw Bridgestone Arena. 12-2-19. The party starts at 6 a.m. Okay? Listen, you can win some tickets to Monday Night Raw. What is it? Monday Night Raw at Bridgestone on Monday? Yeah.
So, you're the one with the paper. Absolutely. Don't ask
me. But I'm saying, no, it's called Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, it is called Monday Night Raw. Or just Raw for short, you know.
Absolutely. So tickets are, you know.
Bingo.
So when you win them, tickets will be ready to be picked up. Superstars of Monday Night Raw will be broadcast to the world live from Bridgestone. So you want to be a part of that live.
So what caller right now is going to win these tickets?
Let's say caller
85.
Why y'all gonna do me like that?
Exactly.
Let's make Marquise answer 84 phone calls.
Eight.
With people breathing on it.
Let's say caller eight.
Oh.
Caller
eight.
Get some calls. Yeah. You want to get some calls.
That's Kobe's old number.
Yeah.
737-1025.
I got you.
All right.
Hey, as eight people breathing on
caller
the phone.
Caller number
I like
eight.
It.
You can win some tickets to WWE Monday Night Raw. It will be live, people. So you can act crazy.
Oh,
and people
man.
Will see you.
That would be fun. Also, again, reminder, I told you guys this last segment, but the Nashville Soccer Club, of course, they've got their soccer expansion draft war room party tonight at Ole Red starting at 4 o'clock, NashvilleSC.com for updates there. Again, if you missed anything from the show, you know, we had an announcement this morning. Nick Kale is no longer with Morning Drive, and if you missed anything, obviously we tell you that we've moved all of our audio on demand to Apple and Spotify. You can search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify, log on to thegamenashville.com as well to find our daily audio. Please rate, review, and subscribe. And if you'd like to hear a little bit more about that, as much as we can tell you, please go listen to the first segment of the show at 6 o'clock. That will give you your best and most current update on the situation with Morning Drive. So Derek and I and Marquise are here for you every morning, and we're going to do the best stick and show we can possibly do every single morning. So we want you guys to trust and believe in us, and so we're here every single morning. Pred's coming up tonight, 7 o'clock. Chris Mason next segment. Top 4 Tuesday, Derek, is tonight, and that is college football playoff rankings. Last week, you know, it was LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia. Mm-hmm. All 4 won. Georgia did it on the road against a high quality opponent. The other 3 did it in dominating fashion against lower level opponents. I can't imagine we're going to see any change. I personally would have Clemson at number 2 ahead of Ohio State. I don't really have a problem if you put anybody, frankly, at number 1 outside of Georgia. I don't think they belong at 1. But if you argue LSU, okay, fine. If you argue Ohio State, okay, fine. If you argue Clemson, fine. Right now, I would go LSU and Clemson at 1 and 2. But I don't have a problem with you know, somebody putting any, you know, Ohio State at number 1. I expect it to be LSU, Ohio State, Clemson, and Georgia tonight. What are your top 4?
My top 4 is Ohio State, LSU, Clemson, then Georgia. I love watching LSU play. I think they can ultimately, you know, I think ultimately they will be the national champion. But if they are going to stumble anywhere, if there's going to be a cause for their stumble, it might just be their defense. Ohio State has proven that, you know, with the arguably the best player, a defensive player in the country in Chase Young, this defensive unit is only giving up, what, 15, 14 points a game, if that, somewhere around there. And their offense is explosive with Justin Fields. LSU has given up a lot of points, but they've scored a lot of points too. So I'm putting O-State 1, LSU 2, and it could change, Clemson 3, Georgia 4. Now 5 for me would be Oklahoma. I just think Oklahoma, the way, minus a CeeDee Lamb, they didn't have arguably their best offensive player. Minus him, they came back and defeated a undefeated Baylor team at Baylor. That's a tough win. And Baylor didn't score a point in the second half.
No, defensively, Oklahoma looked like a real football team.
Exactly.
In the second half.
So, to me, Oklahoma's 5, Oregon 6, and then Alabama at 7.
Yeah, I got Bama at 5, but probably going to change as Mac Jones plays. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to Auburn. You know, I also have Oklahoma at 6. Oklahoma is the fascinating one to watch tonight. That's the one team that, like, what we're trying to figure out is the race to number 4. Because if everybody wins out and Georgia loses to LSU, there's an open spot in the playoff at 4. And you right now you have a Big 12 champion and a Pac-12 champion and Alabama sort of pushing for that final spot should Georgia lose to LSU in Atlanta. And so where the committee puts Oklahoma tonight relative to those other teams, how they view the Baylor win, because they looked terrible in the first half, but they looked exceptional in the second half, mm-hmm. without their best player, like you said, without CeeDee Lamb, how does the committee view what Oklahoma's resume looks like? Because that was by far their best win. So if they were undervalued perhaps by the committee at 10 last week, are they now going to be ahead of Oregon and Utah? Are they still behind Oregon and Utah? Because if Oregon and Utah continue to win and then have a game against each other, it's going to be hard for Oklahoma to make up the ground and jump them in the final rankings. If Oklahoma's ahead of them tonight, mm-hmm. then that sets up for Oklahoma to bulldoze its way into the playoffs, potentially passing Alabama and staying ahead of the Pac-12. So really, I think the most important thing for people to keep in mind tonight is where is the Oklahoma, Oregon, Utah, Bama, mm-hmm. those four, how do they shake out through the committee's eyes? What do they look like? Right now, I would take Oklahoma over Oregon and Utah, but those two teams are far better defensively than Oklahoma, and I understand mm-hmm. the committee likes defense. I understand that. So that I think is the most interesting thing to consider tonight when it comes to the rankings is where's Oklahoma?
But all three of those teams, whether it be Oklahoma, Oregon, Baylor, well, 4 or 5 teams, Utah, Alabama, it doesn't matter.
I mean, Penn State's one loss, Minnesota's one loss.
All those teams need for Georgia to lose.
Yes.
Because if Georgia doesn't lose,
our four are set.
Yeah, the four today will be the four at the end. Assuming they all went out. If Georgia wins the SEC championship, Georgia and LSU are in.
Yep.
Because I think LSU wins out. I think Clemson wins out. Ohio State's going to be tough with Michigan.
And let's play that out. Like, let's say LSU's 12-1. Mm-hmm. They went 12-0. How can you look at a 12-1 LSU team whose only loss is going to be to a number 4 Georgia ranked team? Mm-hmm.
And they've already beaten.
And they've already won all these great games.
Auburn, Alabama. Yeah.
Florida. Texas.
Yes.
I don't know how you look at Oregon, Utah, or Oklahoma and look at their resumes at 12-1. And like Oregon and Utah right now have a combined 0 wins over a top 25 team. They don't have a single win over a top 25 team. Oklahoma has, I think, 1, maybe 2. Mm-hmm. And even then, their better wins, Texas, they just fell out of the rankings. They're lost mm-hmm. to Kansas State. Kansas State just lost and fell out of the rankings. So the resume is not getting better for Oklahoma, even though their win is getting better. Their best mm-hmm. win is against Baylor. I don't see how LSU, I don't even think it's possible for 12-1 LSU's resume to not be significantly better than everybody else. So I agree. If Georgia wins, I think what you probably have happen is Ohio State and Clemson are 1-2, mm-hmm. and then Georgia and LSU are 3-4. Yeah. And sign me up.
Yeah, I mean,
sign me up, dude.
The worst thing for Oklahoma, the worst thing that can happen to Oklahoma moving forward is that if Baylor loses before, say,
they play Texas,
yeah, before the championship game, if Baylor loses to Texas, who's not ranked, That comeback win starts to not look as good.
And it hurts the win that they would have in the Big 12 title game as well. Because they probably will have to beat Baylor again.
Yeah.
Probably. So, listen, I think the most interesting thing about tonight is going to be where's Oklahoma slotted. Because offensively, they're just spectacular. Again, leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else in college football. But defensively, they got major issues. Mm-hmm. Oregon and Utah are far more balanced. They play maybe in a tougher conference. All these things are considered. How you've played. Oregon struggled against Washington State, struggled against Washington, crushed USC. Their only losses to a really good Auburn team. I mean, there's a lot of different ways we can look at these resumes. And so where they shake out tonight, I think, is going to be really important, because all these resumes will get better as the season goes along these last 3 weeks. And oh, by the way, this is the playoff right now. You're in the middle of the playoff right now. So don't tell me you need expansion or want expansion, because right now we've got top 10 matchups every single week deciding the playoff. Every week, Ohio State, Penn State this week. Last week, Oklahoma, Baylor. Minnesota, undefeated. Penn State, undefeated. Alabama, LSU. And then the championship games on Championship Saturday are going to be spectacular. Right now, if it all plays out, you could have play-in games, essentially, in four of the five major conferences. Mm-hmm. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. So I think we're in the middle of one of the best Novembers we've ever had in college football, and I don't think anybody expected that at the start of the year when it was all Alabama-Clemson. Oh, we're all worried about Alabama-Clemson. Well, turns out it's been pretty awesome. Now, Clemson's still pretty good. So yeah. I wouldn't sleep on the old Tigers. The Roy Bus, the rest of y'all, I'm not sure I'd sleep on them. Preds back on the ice tonight after a bad showing Saturday night against Chicago. They need to get that taste out of their mouth. They're back tonight against Winnipeg in a huge divisional game. Defense, goaltending, penalty kills. What's the issue? We'll discuss some of that stuff with Chris Mason when we come back right here on Morning Drive. Preds back on the ice tonight, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7, the Winnipeg Jets in town. Any history, Derek, between the Jets and the Preds? Can't think
just
of any.
Just a little bit.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. Chris Mason, C. Mace, joining us here on the program. Chris, how are you, sir? What is up, man?
Not too much. Just, yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's one. I heard you talk about the history with the Jets and Preds, so it's this is kind of what I think the Preds need right now is a game against a bitter rival. They're kind of in a tough situation, so I think this is just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, get the jam, as Peter Laviolette likes to say. I want to see some jam out there, right? That's what a rivalry game will do. Let me ask you, defensively, this has obviously been the biggest story. You know, 5 goals in 8 of their 19 games. It felt like it was defense early, too many high-danger chances. Even Peter Laviolette admitted that. Then it was sort of some random occurrences against Colorado and Calgary, and then it was, hey, you gave up too many goals on the penalty kill, and now it feels like the defense is better, but the goaltending hasn't been as good. Where do you look when you look at all these different things that have sort of, again, the team is still so early in the season, there's a lot to like about the team, but when you look at these different issues throughout the course of the first quarter of the season, where are you focused in trying to fix the goals against issue?
Well, for me, I think early on, I think, Pekka's play was outstanding. I think it really covered up a lot of mistakes. I think, you mentioned the last few games, and it's just, to me, it's just inconsistency. I think they played a really, probably their best game in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 games was the game in San Jose where I felt like the whole team was committed. It was a 1-1 hockey game. They went into a shootout, obviously lost a shootout, but I saw it in terms of the way the team was committed to defending. That's the kind of game, if I'm the Nashville Predators, that I want to hang my hat on. That's the kind of team that I want to be. I want to play hard and play with some urgency and desperation. And I think they're in a point right now too where it's you have to have that. And even against the Colorado game where they got smoked, I was a big believer. Hey, it's an embarrassing game. You play 82 games. It's going to happen to every team once or twice a year. Just kind of learn from it, let it sink in for a little bit, and then move on. It's one of those kind of one-off type of things. But the way that it's unfolded since then, they had the great game against San Jose, but I think just inconsistent play defensively, and obviously the goaltending hasn't been as good as it was early in the season. I think Saros is coming around in terms of the games that he's starting. I think his last 3 starts have been outstanding. It's tough coming in as a goalie in those relief appearances. Sometimes you're going to come in and stand on your head, and sometimes you're sitting there for 2 hours and you come off cold the bench, cold off of the bench, and things don't go well. So it's just a combination, and I just think that this team, they've got a really good hockey team, but the inconsistencies just have me a bit concerned right now. And I think this is a time where it's not like, hey, let's just forget about the Chicago game. Let's forget about the road trip. This is kind of a point where, internally, I think the team has to kind of look inside and decide what kind of team it wants to be and what their identity is, and then give it every night, because sometimes a lesser opponent, I don't feel like they're you know, completely committed to the defensive side of things all the time.
Now, C-Mace, with that being said, is it an indictment? Because you figure when you come into the season that, for the most part, there has been a couple of changes. But for the most part, this team has been together for the last 3 or 4 years. And identity is the last thing Peter needs to worry about, or those outside that are looking at the Predators. You guys, you and Willie, when you're going over the games, the identity is the last thing you need to worry about. So is it sort of an indictment on the players that there's sort of no identity defensively?
Well, ultimately, it does. It ends up with the players. I mean, it's their responsibility. You know, as a group, they have a strong core of players that over the years have, you know, forged, you know, their basic principles of what their identity is. And one of the things that, you know, Peter Laviolette and the guys talk about is they want to play strong defensively. And the beginning of the year was a little bit of a not a smoke show, but I feel like they're just scoring goals so easily. Defense wasn't a major priority because they were having success. They're getting some pretty high scoring games, but they would come out on the right end of it. So I think that kind of gives the team maybe a false sense of security about the way that you need to play. But I think as the season goes on and things start settling down and, you know, the other teams are coming, your team like the Nashville Predators, you're going to get everyone's best game. They're ready for you. They know you're a good hockey team. They know you're talented top to bottom. You can't ease into these games. I don't care if you're playing the last place team in the NHL. There's that fear factor there where that other team on the other side, you know, they feel, hey, if we don't play our best game, there's a good chance we can get blown out tonight. So you're going to get a lot of those teams' best games. And if you don't bring your best, chances are you're not going to win the majority of those. You know, you might get a few of those ones where you squeak it out and you're a better team and you win on talent alone. But I'll tell you what, you guys know as well as any sport, if you're a good team and you don't bring your best game, it's not easy to win. So it's no different here. But I really think this is a time right now that, you know, we're going to see what they're made of in terms of are they able to back up the way they say they want their team to be. They want defensive priority. Well, defense is hard work. So I think we'll have to see. Tonight could be a good game for them against the Jets to see if they, you know, if they can back up the way they want to play.
Chris Mason joining us here on Morning Drive. And the Jets in town to play the Preds tonight at Bridgestone Arena starting at 7 o'clock, pregame at 6. And listen, on a basic level, is it not just easier to fix defense over the course of an 82-game season than it is to fix offense? Doesn't it take dudes and talent and players to fix offense? Can it take just attention to detail, work ethic, practice, scheme to fix defense? Is that oversimplifying it?
No, not at all. You know, but it's the thing about defense is it takes a commitment from every single guy, and it's the forwards are just as responsible defensively as the defenseman. And I think that, you know, in order to have that commitment, it's, you know, the old you're only as strong as your weakest link. If you have one guy missing an assignment in the defensive zone, if you you go to man-to-man coverage and one guy loses his player, well, that's an odd man chance in front, or a guy left alone and it's in the back of your net. You know, it's the way it seemed to be going lately, and especially against that Chicago game. So it is a lot easier, and they do have a strong team. But it's you know, come to a point where they've really got to get this sorted out, because, you know, after the first couple of those games that were, you know, inconsistent and not great, I wasn't too worried about it. I'm still not that worried about it because, I mean, we're still got, you know, 60 games left this season or more. There's, you know, the most important part of the season is yet to come. But it's, you know, it's one of these things. It just, you can just see it. It's weighing the team down right now. And the consistency of the defensive commitment is the thing that's, it's kind of been there since the beginning of the season. So I think they really need to get that sorted out and start playing the right way. You know, they're going to get their goals. They have a good team. They've got a lot of talent up front, but you know, you're not going to win anything without playing defense. And I think everybody knows that.
Chris Mason, man, always a pleasure. Obviously a huge game tonight. We'll be watching and listening. Thank you so much, dude.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Chris Mason there. Joining us here on Morning Drive in a huge game. And again, I do think it's, you know, so long for this team, Derek, that the defense has been such a thing that it's just such a thing you don't worry about. Yeah. You have not worried about defense with this franchise for basically the entirety of its existence. So to be having a conversation, it feels so foreign, I think, to Preds fans to have a conversation about what is going on with the defense. It's a defensive zone coverage issue the first couple of games, and then it's a penalty kill issue for a few games. Now it's the goaltending that's soft, and of course we expect all of that to round into form. But it's never been a team that's really been built on offense, skill, talent, and then all of a sudden now we're having questions about defense. Like that was just something that's never really happened with this franchise. And so I think it's just a unique place for people to feel right now. I am not overly concerned about it. I think it can be fixed. I don't think people should be panicking in November of a hockey season. But as you've pointed out, we had this issue with the power play and it never got fixed.
Yeah. It's one of those situations where you figure, okay, if we do this, if there's a little bit more hustle, everyone being accountable, us trusting, because defense is all about, trust. It's about trust. You know, if they can get that back and sort of, take all of what they have done in the past, because like you said, the Predators have been known for one thing. Prior to, this outburst of scoring the last year or so, they were a really good defensive team. So much so that, they said, no, we need some offense. We got to generate some offense. We're so good. We got to generate some offense. And they put pieces in place to do that. But was it to the detriment of their defense? They got to find out a way to have a balance. Still being a really good offensive team, but also being a good defensive team as well. And only then until they do that, they will continue to be in this space that they're in right now, sort of on the outside looking in when it comes to playoffs. I think once they get their defense going again, they will become one of the top teams in the National Hockey League. Because I've said it before, they can score with anybody, but can they stop anybody?
I think they'll work that out. I think all of these things will get better. The question is, collectively, how much better do they get over time? We shall see. Obviously, huge game. I think Chris is right, C-Mace is right, that having a game that really hones your focus, that really brings out the best in you, is a really good time to have that because, oh, by the way, you got the Blues in a home-and-home coming up in a few days. Preds fans, don't miss this Wednesday night Smashville Live featuring Nashville Predators, Mikael Granlund, and UC Saros. We'll be in Cool Springs at Brewhouse South. And the show starts at 7 p.m. You can also win tickets to an upcoming Preds game. A limited number of autographs and pictures will be available, so be sure to get there early. This Wednesday night, Smashville Live, of course, is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Yeehaw Brewing Company, and Red Spirits and Wine. The Big Finish when we come back.
We've had a big show. And now it's time for a big finish on Morning Drive.
Morning Drive.
Hey, absolutely.
The Big Finish is brought to you by...
The Big Finish is brought to you by Nashville Soccer Club. Woo-hoo. Get your MLS tickets for the inaugural season today.
There you go.
Go to NashvilleSC.com.
Nashville Soccer Club is also turning its MLS expansion draft war room into a bash on Broadway. And you're invited. MLS expansion draft party will be held at Ole Red on Broadway today. That's today. The free event will begin at 4 o'clock, but fans, we are encouraging you to arrive early to get a good spot on the floor and listen to some good live music. Mm. The expansion draft will kick off at 4:30, Derek.
Okay.
So get there at 4. And if you're going to attend, you must RSVP to attend the event. More details at NashvilleSC.com. So go to NashvilleSC.com.
RSVP, people.
I don't think I know what that stands for.
There you
reserve
go.
Seating.
Very private.
I honestly don't know. I just know the reserve seating.
I never really thought about it either.
reserve seating.
Valuable.
We're going to sound. I don't think we should continue to try this because we're going to sound bad.
I've never even thought about it.
But how about this? Go to NashvilleSC.com for details on how to get into the draft today and for inaural season tickets. And during the rewind, we will figure out what the hell RSVP means. Let's rewind it back.
The
This is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden Gall, Derek Mason, Marquise Munson. I got a quick question for our audience, just out of the blue here. Marquise just got a phone call, and somebody just breathed into the phone. Is that correct, Marquise?
Yeah, all I heard was breathing. I was like, 102.5 The Game.
I was what?
Like, I could see if it was... Like, what do you Halloween, then maybe, yes, it would be acceptable.
Do you like scary movies?
That's like the old Michael Myers, you know, him just...
What are you doing just calling to breathe into the phone?
Yeah, what were you doing? Like, were you on a squatter? I mean, were you on a treadmill at home? Were you, I don't know, were you trying to catch a breath to say something and you couldn't? Did you just get finished running and wanted to call in because you felt compelled to? I don't know.
How long did you let him breathe, Marquise, on the phone?
I mean, I'll let you breathe twice and then I'm
you
out.
You get two breaths and then
two breaths and I'm out.
Two breaths.
You should have said, hello, Willie Waldrose.
That should have.
Hot Pepper Place.
Weird Willie's.
Exactly. Hot Pepper Place. What you want? What you want to order?
Pepper Place.
Will this be dine-in or takeout, sir?
Exactly.
I bet you'd stop breathing right then. You had no problem.
We'll take out, sir.
Oh, wait. Oh, really? Oh, I thought I called a radio station. Floyd Reese joining us here.
If you bring in a Phillip Rivers, you know it's not long-term. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't even know for sure if he wants to leave San Diego to go anyplace else because his family's been there so long. But if, in fact, he comes, you know it's going to be short-term. So what you're doing then is you're bringing in a quarterback and you're paying him, you know, whatever it is you've got to pay him, but it's not going to be cheap. Then you're going to have to draft somebody that is apparently going to be, you know, a backup for a year or two and then take it over, and you're not sure you hit on that guy, you know. So the truth is, in 2 years, you could end up with Phillip Rivers retiring and with a kid playing quarterback that has never played, and you're wondering where you are then. So I think it depends on how strongly you feel about whoever it is you're drafting.
I think if they sign Derrick Henry back, which that should be their main priority other than a quarterback, but if they sign Derrick Henry back, then I look at a guy like Phillip Rivers, and if I'm him, I'm like, okay, I can go there. Because if they shore up the offensive line, the weight is not on me to win games. I could turn around and hand the ball off to this bruising back. And the only time I am called to win a game is in 2 minutes, really. All I'm here to do is to be a veteran, to play good football, and I may have to win a game here and now. I can, but they don't want me to. Only thing they want me to do is turn around and give to Derrick Henry. And if I'm an older quarterback, that's what I want. You know, I still got some years left. You shore up the offensive line. This situation with the Tennessee Titans, the more and more I look at it, it's a ideal situation. I think that's why Ryan Tannehill is having so much success now.
That every single championship game is a playoff game. We have another round of the playoff. It's called Championship Saturday. How great is that day going to be? Just let your mind drift to that day where you have Oregon versus Utah with one loss each in the Pac-12, where you have Georgia and LSU, where you have Ohio State versus Minnesota, you have, you know, Baylor versus Oklahoma, both with one loss, both ranked in the top 10. Just let your mind drift to that day. How good would that day be? And then let your mind drift to an 18 playoff and how meaningless that day might be. If they expand, you're ruining the regular season. I understand that you're adding extra games to the playoff and it's fun and that's good football to watch, but we already get that right now. Championship Saturday is going to be spectacular. I think it's going to be the best Championship Saturday we have had ever. Coach Stansbury joining us here from Western Kentucky.
No question, Louisville is one of the best teams in the country this year. You know, I think it's a plus football program. A lot of places go through cycles a little bit. You know, it's been cycles probably with, you know, Tennessee and Vanderbilt weren't both great. Same way maybe with Louisville being down. But I think the cycle now is, you look at this area, you got Memphis surging back. Tennessee is really, really good. You know, I think you got three or four programs in this state. One state alone is really, really good. You know, programming in Nashville and Belmont, who's a Coach Burge, had them consistently good. So when you throw that net around a 200-300-mile radius, there's quite a few good teams.
And here's another reason why there should not be two Dakotas. South Dakota was in the news yesterday because they unveiled this new educational campaign to stop the war on meth. It's a PSA campaign.
So it sounds like their heart is in the right place, at least so far.
Okay, right. So here's the campaign. It's a bunch of pictures of random people, their school students, and here's the campaign slogan. Meth, we're on it.
What?
Huh?
That's the campaign slogan.
Oh, my God. Do people just sometimes not? Do they look at creative?
Wow.
Creative is a term for advertising. Do you look at these things and just, like, how many different layers of approval did that have to go through where everyone signed off on it?
Do you think that North Dakota has distanced themselves far from this?
Yes.
If I'm North Dakota, I'm putting out a press conference statement right now, distancing ourselves from South Dakota.
We want no part of this.
Meth. We're not on it.
South Dakota, we ain't with them. Did you ever wear, like, tall tees? Like, you know,
because
that was back in, like, tall tees.
Tall tees, big pants. I didn't wear the tall tees.
You didn't have Hilfiger jeans with the hammer, just in case you had a place to...
In college, I did.
I mean, what if you were carrying your hammer? Where were you going to put that hammer?
I was wearing a size 38-32, and I'm about a waist 32.
You had on, like, two pair of shorts underneath.
Yes.
Like, why?
And here's the problem, too, with wearing the basketball shorts under the jeans, is it makes the jeans fall down even more.
Exactly.
Because the mesh is slippery.
I was wearing a 3X t-shirt.
Oh,
and I wasn't
I'm
a 3X.
I'm just thinking about this. Oh, my. 3X shirt, and you were really a medium.
Oh, I was wearing XL stuff in the 90s in high school, too. Oh, I had XL button-downs that went down to my knees. It's ridiculous.
My jerseys were 2XL.
Right. It was so bad.
That was actually the style.
Everything was baggy, from the waist all the way to the ankles, the shirts.
You know it's
everything.
Coming back. It's coming back.
It better not.
No, it is coming back.
I've seen some people doing it. It makes no sense.
It's coming back.
All right. I don't.
With the Kanye oversized white t-shirts? Yeah,
yes, let's come back. All right, let's go.
Give me a break. Fashion needs to make no sense. That is the Daily Rewind, a part of the Big Finish, brought to you, of course, by Nashville SC. And check out the website there, NashvilleSC.com. We want to go what's on tap tonight. Is that what we want to do right now? We got a little college hoop action tonight. Obviously, number one, Winnipeg in town, Bridgestone Arena, pregame at 6, puck drop at 7, Preds, Jets, big time.
And then also RSVP, derived from a French word.
Respondez, s'il vous plaît.
Exactly, meaning respond, please. That's all it means. Respond, like, please.
Please text me back.
Yeah, please text me back.
Please text
respond,
me back.
Please. So
that's all
I
it
am
is.
Not going to say RSVP. No more. I'm just going to say respond.
Have you guys seen that commercial?
Have you seen
that commercial where that guy responds to text in person?
I actually like that.
He's like, LOL, come on it on in.
So you're just going to, you could have just responded, right?
I enjoy the premise of that commercial where they're like, no, I would like to respond to you in person. I'm like, oh, imagine that.
Yeah.
Two human beings.
Come on in.
Two human beings looking at each other face to face having a conversation.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Talking. Yeah. That's not anymore.
RSVP.
Respond, please.
It's amazing that is a French phrase with the acronym
RSVP
in America. It's very, very interesting. Who came up with that one?
Not SVP.
Virginia, Kansas, Maryland, Gonzaga, Washington ranked teams all in action tonight, but most importantly, pregame 6, puck drop 7, Preds, Jets tonight, Bridgestone Arena. Huge one for the Nashville Predators. For Derek Mason, for Marquise Munson, my name is Braden Gall. Thanks for listening to Morning Drive, everybody.
Bailey, DJ Nashville, Nick, I love you. Peace.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.